the day.
California.
2-1 in a referendum. Clear right-wing swing in terms of finance politics. It means a cut of $7 billion in funding for welfare, poor people's needs in terms of medical care, job opportunities. One of our own people's job will be discontinued, Reverend Young. This is a serious blow to reform measures and the beginning of a nationwide tax revolt. It was also passed in New Jersey. Jarvis, a neo-fascist, former newspaper publisher, who goes way beyond the definition of ultra-conservative, after his success in California, is going to take a sweeping tour of the nation to set precedents for other such tax revolts as Proposition 13. Urban decay will remain. The brunt of the attack is racist in tone, aimed at minorities, black, Indian, and Chicano. It passed, as I said, 2-1, and means a $7 billion loss of revenue for welfare, for health care, for housing, for job opportunities, for the poor and minorities in California. Chemical warfare plans have been renewed, based on some type of propaganda that a few years ago, Soviet troops and Soviet tank maneuvers in Israeli actions when the Israel war with the Arabs was completed many years ago, they found a Soviet tank, apparently, with defensive equipment to resist nerve gas warfare and a canister of nerve gas. Now, U.S. propaganda is incredible. That was many, many years ago. Why now all the ballyhoo? Why are we trying to whip up the mood in USA? And they succeeded to pronounce that chemical warfare will be used against the Soviets in Europe. And of course, the Soviet Union responded that they had no plans. They will have to undergo the same extensive revamping of their military to prepare for chemical warfare with the USA. These chemicals are known for paralysis, blinding, and slow and torturous death. Disarmament talks are still being hindered by Carter's own obstinance over his resentment of Soviet efforts towards the black liberation movements in Africa. One historian compares man's stages in development to 800 lifetimes. Nearly 800 of those lifetimes would have been spent in the cave man stage. Only 6 lifetimes out of the 800 have involved the printed word. 2, the electric motor stage, and 1/2 of the material goods and scientific developments of the world have occurred in 1/4 of only 1 lifetime, if you were to divide human history into 800 lifetimes. The atomic bomb has come in 1/10 of 1 lifetime out of the 800. 1/800,000th of man's history, has been devoted to atomic, nuclear, chemical, interstellar, and outerstellar warfare. It says it does not speak well it's at the BBC Science Symposium, of man's possible survival through the nuclear age. The Japanese are in a struggle with the Soviet Union over the Kuril Islands. Both are making claim to those island chains, and Soviet Union have begun war maneuver practices on the islands. So the Japanese, who have been a peace-loving people since the destruction of two of their major cities, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, I mean the populace, that is, its government is very pro-Western, imperialist. The Japanese did have a constitution that would not even allow people in their fighting forces to be called soldiers. They had defense laws in their constitution that forbid any Japanese soldier or member of their security forces to be transported abroad. But now with U.S. imperialism's new efforts in Central Africa, the Japanese are changing their constitution to allow the use of Japanese fighting forces in this monstrous aggression of monopoly capitalism, U.S. imperialism, in the Trilateral Commission, in the core of Africa, in Zaire. Until the Constitution is changed, the Prime Minister is bending the law by allowing Japanese security forces to serve as medical and transport workers in the new aggressive efforts in Africa. Birth deformities are noted throughout Australia due to the pesticide dioxin, particularly when fields are burned, it turns it into a dangerous pesticide that has been causing 6 times the birth defects of the normal world population. 500 million pounds in revenue have been cut off by a populist movement in Britain, also of a right-wing and racist nature, to reduce taxes, forcing the British government to have to borrow from U.S. imperialism's World Bank and IMF to offset its deficit that could lead to bankruptcy in the British Isles. As you know, there's an extreme right-wing movement. Now the Labour government of Prime Minister Callaghan in England or Britain or United Kingdom is in serious difficulty as the Liberal Party has withdrawn its support that had made up the coalition Labour government, and the polls show that the next government will be the Conservative government of Margaret Thatcher, racist, who has called for the banning of all black and Indian immigrants into Africa. That's why the Guyana Constitution referendum has as part of its change that Commonwealth nations will no longer automatically get Guyanese citizenship. Furthermore, Margaret Thatcher, speaking of repatriation of all people of color, an open racist move, as was the California victory for Proposition 13. Jarvis has long been known as one of the most anti-black members of the legislature and a reactionary newspaper publisher. Joshua Nkoma in Zaire proudly says, yes, we have Cuban advisors helping his forces of the Patriotic Front in Zambia. And he said, I have Soviet aid. He said the Soviet Union and the Cuban people have been the only assistance that Africa could depend upon. There was always a hypocritical reason for Western imperialism to be involved in Africa. It built billions of dollars of profits for the ruling white classes of USA. But Zambia is being brought under great pressure. President Kwanda has been forced to meet with the dictator of Zaire, Mobutu, to discuss security problems of the border and to give certain guarantees to the new Pan-African Intervention Force headed by U.S. imperialism and its lackeys, Belgium, Britain, France, and the Federal Republic of neo-Nazi West Germany. As you know, African puppet dictators have been utilizing their citizens such as Senegal and King Hassan of Morocco, which is a dread dictatorship, has also been using its troops, but it's being spread rather thin in the 30,000 Moroccan troops are trying to stop the African liberation taking place in West Sahara, where 25 million people have died due to CIA intervention and experimentations with weather. And the Mauritanian government, a reactionary regime, is tottering and has had to be sustained by some of these 30,000 Moroccan troops. Morocco is in real trouble in its economy. It depends upon one product, phosphate. The world market price of phosphate has dropped from $68 per pound to $11. Continuing with the news. It looks like Younger slipped through a reactionary to promise to be the governor of California. Davis almost made it. Uncertainty, with certainty would make it another time. But due to the interest of the people in the reactionary Proposition 13, Jarvis Amendment, Younger slipped through. He supported Proposition 13 and is known for his corrupt police state tactics and right-wing perspective. He far outdistances Brown at the poll. But it really makes little difference, as we now find that Edmund Brown, so-called young populist, governor of California, is involved in the Indonesian oil scandals with his father in the corrupt fascist state of Suharto. They've been involved in the national Indonesian oil scheme, making profits while 500,000, a half million citizens of Indonesia have been murdered by the state. Thousands will be unemployed, according to BBC, in the Bay Area alone, due to the passage of Proposition 13. Throughout the state, it will mean loss of employment in California for conservatively 500,000 people. Australia is in Europe, angered by competitive practices of the remaining imperialist capitalist nations, saying that European capitalists and American capitalists are looking after themselves. And Australia is there demanding a bigger export market in Europe. Britain's response and Germany was that they will expect very little guarantees to be given to Australia, who has not cooperated sufficiently with NATO in its new aggressive designs in Africa. President Carter will be conducting a major USA-Soviet policy speech in Annapolis, Maryland, Naval Academy, where he graduated some years ago. Soviet missiles have been placed around Haiphong in Vietnam to protect them against the renegade mainland Chinese imperialist designs. Chinese Foreign Minister is still in Zaire, working out details for Chinese aid and military assistance. USA exhibiting the contradictions of capitalism, is quite nerved over the prospects of actual Chinese troops. But if Zaire is to be maintained in its oppressive hold over the peoples who have been demanding liberty so long, like the Katangan people, who've been forced to live in caves until their last liberation effort, Chinese troop assistance will be necessary. That's why the USA is seeking Japanese troops, because they trust the Japanese a little more because they're capitalists. Yet there's great fears and distrust against the Japanese because they are not white. U.S. and Soviet relations, according to world opinion, have deteriorated to the lowest point since the Stalin era over events in Africa. President Carter will address the nation with his new Soviet policy changes at his speech in Annapolis. The CIA has been given a blank check. Its budget requests are unknown to the American public, but both the Congress and the Senate, in a new right-wing move, have put to sleep all their fears of the CIA and given them carte blanche opportunities to bilk the American public, the taxpayer dollars, to conduct their cloak-and-dagger murder operations abroad. As Dr. Tolmie Reed, our good friend, Deputy Prime Minister, head of the PNC, has stated, the CIA is again about its murderous business in the Caribbean and particularly in Africa. Prime Minister Callaghan, Prime Minister of England, Britain, or the United Kingdom, said the Cold War has begun all over again. Because, primarily, A, Soviet military buildup in Europe. B, Soviet and Cuban intervention in assisting African liberation efforts. He particularly is concerned over Europe, which he said is a highly volatile area that could lead to nuclear confrontation and war at any time. Three, he said Soviet in violation of human rights was the next major reason for the beginning of a new Cold War between the Soviet Union and USA and NATO, its puppet allies. The human rights question has been a whipping boy by the U.S. administration for some time. However, little is said about the denial of human rights to tens of thousands of black people and Indians who are jobless and being framed in prisons every day. 90% of the jails and prisons of USA are filled with Indians and blacks. Greg Dalahue in U.S. press, in the new Cold War frenzy, is now being held about the trial of Alexander Ginsburg, noted right-wing proponent of Zionism. He will be tried in Kaluga for anti-Soviet propaganda and organizing conspiratorial dissent against the Soviet government. U.S. scientists, educational tours, all governmental summer tours have been canceled. That is their planned visits to the Soviet Union in protest. That includes Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare of the USA's Califano's high-level visit that had been planned. Worst strain in relations, says the Chicago Tribune, than has ever been known in Soviet-U.S. relations. 20 more Soviet dissenters, as U.S. Capitalist Radio calls it, have been jailed. The Soviet Union charged that they have arrested 20 of their citizens who were involved in CIA activities to try to subvert the Soviet government. They're being held in pretrial detention. Anwar Sadat comes out in a very aggressive stance today, says he will not hesitate to send Egyptian troops to Israel if Israel does not come off of its high horse and its Zionist aggression and accept the peace approach that has been agreed upon. It's the first hint of war by him in several years. He said, "We will not give one inch of our land to the Zionist expansionist. Demands return of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. Israel is equally adamant that none of this conquered territory by the Israeli aggressive actions will be returned." United States Defense Secretary Brown, pressuring the American people, doesn't seem to be too much effort to do that in the Congress passes a CIA budget, not knowing how big it is. It's bigger than the budget for the U.S. State Department and several other departments included, but neither the Congress or the Senate even looked at the budget and just gave a blank check to it. So U.S. Secretary Brown, reactionary Secretary of Defense, says Turkey is essential to NATO. He demands that the arms embargo be lifted, because in the past Turkey had used the arms in aggressive actions against the Cypriots. But this little clause is being withdrawn from U.S. policy. He said if Turkey withdrew from NATO, it could have severe consequences. Callahan says this is a very bad precedent for USA to start giving aid to countries that have been known to use weapons aggressively. But it looks as if Congress will lift the 3.5-year ban on Turkish arms supplies. Alexander Haig, noted right-wing general, chief advisor under Nixon, now chief administrator, chief of staff of NATO, North Atlantic Treaty Organization, says that Turkey is the bedrock anchor of the southern flank of NATO's military designs on Europe and to contain the Soviet Union. In referring to a phrase that had left the rhetoric, vernacular of USSR and USA Soviet relations, the Soviet and American relations, General Haig said, "If we do not respond to the Turkish people and government to give them military aid, there are warm arms of supplies waiting them on the other side of the Iron Curtain." The Iron Curtain, as a phrase, had gone out with McCarthy.
Can you tell me, do you have any...
Carter has gone back on plans to reduce naval efforts. He's going to increase the Navy force, Polaris nuclear missiles, submarines, submarine force. The naval force will be increased by some 300 large vessels, mostly including destroyers and mobile missile carrying vessels. Soviets could not be confident now, he said, of a quick conventional victory because of the placement of chemical warfare ability on the part of U.S. imperialists in Europe. Now, he said, if the Soviets attempt conventional efforts in Europe, there will be an escalation to tactical, at least one stage, tactical chemical warfare, then strategic warfare. But Prime Minister Callahan of Britain said it is insane to think that all of these stages won't lead ultimately to nuclear war. Foreign Minister Gromyko of the Soviet Union said all the blocks to SALT talks have not been resolved. Final approval requires a number of meetings. He said there's apparently no rush by the United States to speed up agreements in strategic arm limitation talks, which the Soviet Union considers essential to avoid nuclear war. He said the Soviet-American controversy in Africa has no way of being resolved because the Soviet Union is pledged to support the liberation efforts of the black struggling peoples in Africa. Is it very clear that the Soviet Union interprets the USA, as the Washington Post also did, as being guilty of stalling maneuvers and freezing all efforts to bring about nuclear disarmament? Tanzania, a close friend of Guyana, in fact, it was after Tanzania that the Guyana National Service was modeled, attacks the USA in blistering terms, calling it an effort of U.S. imperialism to turn Africa back into banana republics and a vicious form of neo-U.S. Western colonialism. The attack appeared in the Tanzanian Daily News. Criticism even was aimed at U.S. imperialism by Liberia. And that government had been a moderate nation of former U.S. slaves that had settled back in Africa and always been known for its support of USA. But he said Liberia, President, trying to dictate or trying to determine the future of the African people. Luxembourg talks include France, Britain, West Germany, U.S. and Belgium. Discussion of the dollar that is demoralizing many investors, particularly the OPEC oil-rich nations, and discussions of Africa will be taking place 16 out of the next 24-hour days for the rest of the week. French idea development fund to try to support an international development fund to try to support the European common market economies that are in very difficult situation. Western imperative, said the French, to develop mechanisms to ensure the maintenance of capitalism in Europe and the peaceful development of capitalism in Africa to stabilize the efforts of or destabilize the efforts of the Cubans and the Soviet Union to bring about liberation in Africa. Even Liberia, as I said, was very critical of superpower intervention. Idi Amin said, oh, he wanted a Pan-African army. He welcomed the savages from USA to come to the heart of Africa. He made a pun of it. He said USA will not be able to again dominate African affairs. Peking is building up its own defenses more rapidly than ever against what they say is sure to be a Soviet nuclear retaliation. It appears that Chinese foreign policy is aimed at this very thing. In their chauvinism, they are attempting to bring the USA and the USSR into conflict and feel, because of their large population, that they will inherit the world after the nuclear dust settles. Prime Minister Wang Hua says the Soviet Union is the most dangerous source of war, accuses the USSR of military aggression and imperialistic expansion in Africa. China thinks the U.S. is not interested in fighting the African conflict and is looking to third world nations and China to do their dirty work. China obviously has some conscience, but a very imperialistic foreign policy and a very dangerous one. The Warsaw Pact is fighting the frightening increase of NATO imperialism, was the issue of Warsaw Pact. USSR has superiority in nuclear arms, in navy warfare potential, and in outer space war, said General Haig. Stalin would have cheered loudly the recent developments SS General Haig, Stalin never did believe that the Soviet Union could live peacefully with U.S. imperialism and its lackeys. Thus ends the major points of the news. That news is not particularly pleasant, but that is the news as it is. Now we will discuss for a moment how economists juggle statistics. Remember, our interest will show whether we have a test this evening. Remember, Women's Revolutionary Socialist Movement, 7:30, and the Men's Liberation Movement at 7:30, then a joint meeting following. Let us not have testing. We will show that by our interest. There will be tests over current events and news this week, as all of us are entering college stage, and we all want to show our knowledge of world events, because it's knowledge that enables people to be free. The first inclination of learning that bourgeoisie economists are having a debate over statistics is to suppress a yawn and move on to more stimulating matters. But a seemingly esoteric quarrel with the Bureau of Labor Statistics in USA over how unemployment should be measured rests on much more, as we shall see. The argument surfaced not long ago with an article in the Morgan Guarantee Survey. Morgan is one of the rich families like DuPont, Rockefeller, I.G. Farben that made all the gas ovens to destroy Jews, blacks, and browns, that control imperialism in its final stages as it moves into a fascist mentality through the Trilateral Commission. As I said, the argument surfaced in an article recently in the Morgan Guarantee Survey. A business advice house organ of one of the most powerful finance capital groups in the world, the Morgan Guarantee Trust Company. The article by Richard Nixon's one-time Commissioner of Labor Statistics, Geoffrey Moore, declares that there is fuller employment in the U.S. today despite the official 7.5% rate of unemployment than there was in earlier so-called full employment years, such as 1947 to 48, 1951 to 53. When the official unemployment rate then was under 4%. Now let's look at how capitalist economists juggle their statistics. The basis for this argument is a new indicator now employed by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. While the former indicator emphasized the number of unemployed, the new measure focuses on positive thinking. Religiosity is in every phase of capitalism, that mystical diversion. And it calculates the number of unemployed, the number of employed. The new yardstick determines the ratio of employment as a percentage of the entire working age, that is 16 and older, of the population. According to the new indicator, the total number of people holding jobs in this year, spring, made up about 55% of the entire working age population. But in those earlier boom years, when for all practical purposes full employment was deemed to have been achieved, the job holders constituted only 53% of the total working age population in USA. In other words, only half those who can work in USA have employment, whereas in the socialist countries such as Cuba, the Soviet Union, and the quasi-socialist nation of Sweden, you have nearly full employment. It is falling in Sweden, but there's absolutely total employment in the Soviet Union and Cuba. Ergo, ERGO, concludes Moore, if those were full employment years and jobs per capita were the criterion, we have fuller employment now than we did then. Not surprisingly, a number of hard-nosed economists such as Federal Reserve Board Chief Arthur F. Burns and Herbert Stein, one-time chairman of the Council of Economic Advisers for Nixon's administration, thinks this is a great way to look at things. for it can be demonstrated that present-day employment is really the invention of the I-won't-work malcontents and bleeding-heart liberals. Then there is little reason for government measures to aid the unemployed or to promote jobs, because really, the I-won't-work syndrome of blacks and browns, the bigotry of finance capitalism, excuses himself by saying it's just that blacks and brown people are shiftless and lazy. Behind this rests a much more fundamental set of premises which these gentlemen share with the rest of their class. Wages are too high. Worker productivity is too low. Worker fringe benefits are too costly, and society is doing too much to cushion the hardships of being out of work, so that the unemployed have gotten too choosy about the jobs they'll accept. That's the reason for the reactionary fascist moves such as the passage of Proposition 13, cutting back on funds, reduction of property taxes for major industries. Oh, how ignorant the Californian populace is to fall for such foolishness. There is, of course, nothing new in the above. The corporate board of directors that doesn't subscribe to this view has not yet been discovered. After all, since it is in their interest to think this way, it should hardly come as a surprise that they would articulate their self-interest in the form of self-serving truisms. In order to understand the capitalist, which is almost now fascist bourgeoisie outlook, however, we must go beyond the immediate dollars and cents questions. Capital always wants to reduce costs and increase profits. That goes without saying. But the key to this consists in putting the crunch on the working class as a whole, so that the actual living situation of the workers will make them so desperate that they will be forced to accept employment under conditions completely controlled by the employers. How does all this square with the fact that a greater percentage of the population is holding down jobs today than ever before, including in times of full employment? Bourgeoisie capitalist economists, although they describe it differently, think that 4% and less is full employment, because under those conditions, the labor force or the labor reserve is too small to operate effectively as a brake on working class demands, even though millions and millions, even at 4%, would be unemployed in USA. There is more involved here than playing with numbers. True, some bourgeoisie economists see the value in disguising the real unemployment picture for the reasons stated above. This is why the official figures are always so low. But if a higher proportion of the population is actually employed than in the earlier periods, doesn't this prove that far from declining, capitalism is actually making progress in solving its problems? Actually, it proves the contrary. It proves what Marx said a long time ago, that despite certain superficial phenomena which seem to show the contrary, the conditions of the working class in the USA and all capitalist nations as a whole under monopoly capitalism becomes increasingly worse and severe. The real question that must be answered is this: why has the percentage of workers in the population increased? Is it because more people have become enthralled with the idea of spending 8 to 10 hours a day working in a modern factory under mind-deadening, noise, and life-shortening conditions? Have more people voluntarily entered the labor force because of new career opportunities? The absurdity of such questions is self-evident. What has really happened in monopoly capitalism as it leads on the road to finance capitalist imperialism in the last stage of senile capitalism, open fascism? What has really happened? The real income, or to put it another way, the actual purchasing power of millions of working class families has gone down. The general inflationary trend, cost of living, that is, and the wider variety of necessities of modern life have outpaced worker earnings. The latest consumer price index figures for last month show, along with a 1.8% jump in prices, a 3% drop in consumer purchasing power. On an annual basis, that will amount to a 36% decline in real income for the average worker in USA. the end of this year, the U.S. worker will be able to buy only 44% or 54% of what it did in January, beginning this year. His dollar will be only worth 54 cents, and yet his wages won't have gone up. But do not workers today have a higher standard of living than their parents? They own automobiles, refrigerators, washing machines, don't they? Doesn't this make life easier and better? First of all, for the average industrial worker in the USA, an automobile is not a luxury, it is a necessity. And where both husband and wife are working, two cars are even needed often. Without them, they could not get to work. The fact is that today there are more working wives than ever before because millions of working class families cannot survive on the income of one worker alone. Public service transportation is fought by the multinational corporations that have been bleeding Africa and set up the dread concentration camps in the Union of South Africa, like Ford, Chrysler, and all the big name car companies, because they don't want public service transportation. That would cut down on profits. They want to burden the back of the workers, even if it means asphyxiating them, causing early deaths with cancer, other diseases related to the chemicals, carbons in the air. And so a car is essential because there is no free public transportation or low-cost public transportation. And with wives in the workforce, such things as refrigerators, washing machines, television sets, the automatic babysitter, fast foods, and the like become a part of the necessary daily routine of family life, totally tied to social production for capitalist gain. Number two, the disintegration of family life itself, a reflection of the general social crisis in morality of capitalism, has brought into being a relatively new phenomenon, the single-parent family. This single parent is usually a woman, and being the sole source of support now for her children, she has to work often two jobs. The breakup of the plantation system in the South has thrown millions of black families off the land, transforming them from a class of semi-feudal peasant slaves tied to the land into proletarian, that is, workers who have entered into industry in massive numbers. The economic effect of U.S. imperialism in the Caribbean and Latin America has served to deform or destroy the agricultural base for millions of people, large numbers of whom have had to move to the United States seeking employment. Among these people, a significant portion of whom are here without legal papers, starvation wages makes it necessary for all members of the family to seek work and live in fear that they'll be arrested for not having proper papers. So, in both absolute and relative terms, there are more people working for wages today than ever before. But all this proves is that the actual situation of the mass of workers, the proletariat, today is worse in USA than it has been before. The average working class family cannot get by on one income anymore as they used to even 10 years ago. And so both husband and wife are absolutely obliged to sell their labor power to the capitalist class. The wife invariably at a much lower rate due to male chauvinism than the husband, and thereby further reproduce the very conditions of their exploitation and enslavement to the bourgeoisie. Are wages higher than they used to be? They seem to be. But keep in mind that the actual working life of most workers is shorter than it used to be, to a great extent because the intensity of modern production burns workers out earlier. Actually, life expectancy is dropping in USA. As a result, the income-earning years must serve to cover many more years in which fixed pensions, Social Security, and the like keep retired workers barely above the subsistence level, and not always above it either. And now there's talk with the new reactionary move, such as the Jarvis Proposition 13 bill that passed, that they will also ban Social Security, and then people will have nothing to retire on. What becomes obvious after a while is that the myth of high wages must be contrasted with forced overtime, high rates of absenteeism, total annual income, layoffs, absenteeism, non-job-related illnesses, all serve to reduce a worker's annual income. Family purchasing power and lifetime income is thus reduced. when put in this context, Marx's statement on the absolute impoverishment of the working class does not seem to be so at odds with reality as some have claimed in USA propaganda. All this is important not merely to refute the bourgeoisie propaganda, such as the nonsense now being peddled about full employment, which does not exist. More to the point is that the working class in USA itself must be disabused of these selfsame illusions. They must and can, they can be brought to understand, not to confuse, brief periods of relatively high income for some with the permanent deterioration of their conditions as workers. For instance, there's an increase in the middle class, the upper middle class amongst blacks, but equally 40% of the blacks are now living in sub-starvation conditions, in poverty, as opposed to only 25% 10 years ago. Such an understanding is indispensable if the working class is to learn the objective limitations on its ability